Dharma talk is not as what you see right in front of you. Someone arrives and lectures and talks to you, and you arrive and you fight traffic and you're here. That's not a Dharma talk. A Dharma talk started way, 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 way before. And it comes as a culmination of many, many, many types of effort, aspiration, prayers, wishes, and diligence. So it's not you just show up or you happen to meet a teacher or you happen to come across something by accident. Something that brings you to full enlightenment is very rare that it happens or it doesn't happen by accident. So don't think, oh, I heard about this teacher from here, here, and I know about this teacher from there, and you know, I was walking down a shopping mall, I saw a poster, and no. Because we've seen so many posters, we've seen, heard so many teachers, we've recognized so many, we understand, but there's no draw, or even if we have a draw, no situation to get there, or no ability to get there, or whatever obstacles arise. So don't think that a Dharma talk is just a Dharma talk. A Dharma talk is giving you the knowledge, the wisdom, and the basis for you to liberate yourself from any type of unhappiness now and permanently in the future, to give you control of your life, to give you control of your mind, not be controlled, but control. And how? Not by force or belligerence or by hostility, but by logic, by knowledge, taught by someone whose mind has been completely under control, Lord Buddha. And so therefore, a Dharma talk is not simply just a Dharma talk. Oh, I can make it, I cannot make it, you know, maybe I go, maybe I don't go, or it's very silly. If we have the opportunities of a perfect human body, and our five senses are intact, and we have the freedom of time meaning we can make our time, and we're able to obtain the Dharma talk, and there's someone who can speak to us clearly, and someone who can elucidate. This did not come by accident. To think that it came by accident arises from not knowing or ignorance. This all came from many, many causes from the side of the teacher, from the side of the people, and from the side of the Buddha's prayers himself, that his Dharma may spread to be of benefit to others. Buddha didn't pray that everybody becomes Buddhists. Buddha didn't pray for everybody to worship him. Buddha prayed that ignorance may be destroyed, which is the cause of suffering and samsara. And he prayed for you to take refuge and to listen and to understand that which is Dharma, which dispels ignorance. So Buddha didn't go on some kind of tour throughout India, north and south, all over, to make everybody a Buddhist or to follow him. Why? That purpose is very, very short term. To run around saying I'm a Buddhist is very short term. Why is it short term? It doesn't do anything for you. In fact, it can sometimes harm others. So my point is, from the side of the students, definitely, in a previous life, all of us must have circumambulated around some stupa, taken by a friend, whether we know the full benefits or not. Inside must have had some very holy reliquary of a past Buddha, of a saint, of a lohan, an arhat, or a bodhisattva. We must have circumambulated around that stupa. And that stupa was created by many causes of other people who brought the material necessities and knowledge and prayers and motivation together to create that. And or some of us were donators of temples that created places of peace and happiness for other people. Maybe some of us were the causes of other people's direct happiness. Maybe some of us practice under teachers from previous lives. And it doesn't have to be Buddhism. It can be teachers of other traditions which teach the same message. Maybe some of us in the past saw a Buddha image and generated awe and inspiration and perhaps even prayed. Maybe some of us in a previous life were monks and nuns. Highest caliber or not, doesn't matter. And maybe some of us in the past was blessed or was seen or was touched or given a gift by a realized being that plants a seed in their minds. None of us arrives at a Dharma talk by accident. And why? More so now than in the past. Because the obstacles are much more greater now to attend a Dharma talk than it was prior to technology. Much more. And then why we're in the Dharma talk, to receive the Dharma talk, is very, very, very difficult. Why is that? To stay awake, to focus, to put all our past learning away, to have an open, clear mind, to be clear and sharp is another issue. Education is meant to benefit people, as this Holiness says. Education is supposed to benefit a person and improve their mind, improve their thinking. But sometimes education has the opposite effect, because all you get is material benefits from education, maybe if you put in effort. But sometimes education makes you overanalyze, overthink, and overcheck, where you spend your lives checking, thinking, and looking, but you never come to a conclusion, or it's too late to go into practice after conclusion. So education can be an obstacle. Education intrinsically is not beneficial. It's the motive and how we use it. Intrinsically is not beneficial. It is not good, it's not bad. Intrinsically, it's free of good or bad. Like most phenomena, all phenomena, in fact. So we must have perhaps sat under some masters in the past. Maybe we had the fortune to hear the name of a Buddha. Maybe we were able to sponsor some Dharma texts. Maybe some of us in our previous life had the fortune to glimpse the golden face of the Dalai Lama in one of his previous incarnations and make aspirational prayers. Oh, you're wonderful. May I be like you one day. That is enough to plant seeds. Maybe if some of us were in other countries, such as Cambodia and Burma and Sri Lanka and Laos, wherever, where all these great Buddhists, all these great Maha Panditas and teachers resided, and we generated a good thought under one of these holy beings, holy monks or nuns. Doesn't have to be Tibet. Dharma is Dharma. Maybe some of us made offerings of alms to monks and nuns in the past. We stood on the roadside and respectfully we offer something. Maybe some of us were patrons of Dharma in the past, where we made motivation that wherever I'm born, wherever I am, may I not be separated from the Dharma. Why? Not a fanatical devotion, but that in the previous life you realize it is something very precious. And you can't complete your path in that previous life. And having fear that in future lives you don't know what the situation is going to be, the only thing you can do is take refuge in the Buddha and make a motivation towards the Buddha and hope and wish by the power of that motivation your prayers will arise again. So from the side of the students, it's a lot of effort from previous lives to plant the seeds for the seeds to open. And to find the right teacher, to find the right lineage and the right practice. All lineage, all teachers are good. But to find the one that is especially pertinent to yourselves to continue. You see, anywhere, everywhere, whether it's Dharma or not Dharma, doesn't really matter. You will hear positive and negative. There are going to be people who absolutely love your parents, and there's going to be people who absolutely hate your parents. Whether they love your parents or hate your parents should not sway your devotion and your respect for your parents, because they love you, and they care for you, and they have many years to prove it. So what happens is, in any situation, in any place, Dharma cannot be separated from samsara. Dharma and samsara is inseparable. Why? Because our mind don't make a distinction due to lack of training. So what happens is that to find the right teacher, to find our right practice and right lineage again, comes totally from the prayers and aspirations and the merits of the students from previous lives. Some effortlessly find. Some take some time. Some have doubts for many years and waste a lot of time. But whatever it is a lot of effort on the side of the student. And then in this very life, to find that, you have to put your schedules aside, because you're taught to work. You're taught to save money. You're taught to have a relationship. You're taught to have a nice house. You're taught to have a nice car. You're taught to maintain all of that with a lot of work. And so when we go to work and we make a lot of money, we find that to have a lot of essence, not because we're bad and attached only. It is more that it's habituation, that's what we're told. We didn't get a higher knowledge. So what happens is, from the side of the students, in this life alone, how many obstacles do we need to overcome before we can attend a Dharma talk? And then even during the Dharma talk, to listen and say, yes, I'm going to make a difference. It's a lot of effort. It's a lot of effort. And coming to a Dharma talk, the effort that we make coming is tremendous. So to attend a Dharma talk is not simply just walk into a building. No. And then the building itself was conceived by someone, was sought by someone. The rental was signed with a good motivation. And the rent has to be paid. It has to be sponsored. And the building has to be cleaned and washed and painted. People did that. Items had to be imported over. Air cons had to be installed, lights, everything. The fixtures had to be put in so that during a Dharma talk, everybody can have comfort. That comes from the compassion of the Sangha of the center. the compassion, and the compassion of the sponsors, and the compassion of the people who made a motivation. Not only may they have the Dharma, may others. People who sponsor the Dharma, who make donations to the Dharma, or you know, statues, you know, maybe they support monks, or they support the rental, or people who don't wish to take from the Dharma, but actually give. Those type of people reflect the type of compassion. What is that? They not only want Dharma for themselves, they want it for other people. That they have enough love and care to support in any way, shape, or form institutions that benefit other people. Simply attending a Dharma talk and not supporting and helping Dharma in any way, shape, or form is a clear sign. It's not good or bad. There's not negative, positive. Of one's innate self-cherishing mind that me. Those who are able to help the Dharma in time, in intelligence, in effort, in skill, in finances, in any way, inspiration from their practice. Even people who stay at home, do their retreats, and they don't do much else when we hear about it, it is contributing to the Dharma. I'm not being eloquent. This is not some kind of a collect a donation, pass the hat talk. No, it is the truth. So those who donate and help and contribute towards the Dharma, we praise them. We don't worship them, and we don't kiss their money. We don't kiss their time and effort. We praise them because what are we praising in sponsors? Of money, of time, effort, cleaning, washing. What are we praising? Listen carefully. Their compassion. We respect them for their compassion. Why? Those who donate and help. Whether they know it or not, the truth is, deep down inside, they wish to bring the benefits of Dharma to everybody else. That is what it really is. And that thought cannot come like that. Why? That is a selfish thought going to a less selfish thought. And that develops. So people who support and help in any way, shape, or form the Dharma, you know, if they don't have money, that's fine. To go there and clean up and wash ahead of time or afterwards. To be involved with the procedures of getting the Dharma talk. And to do it harmoniously and to do it with respect to other Dharma brothers and sisters. What is that? That's a clear show of compassion. Compassion in action. So when we praise these people, like me, I send a lot of SMSs to the KH phone and I have it forwarded to all of you. Why do I do that? I do that to let you know all of us have compassion. All of us do good things. And when we do good things, when we're a child, we need to be praised. We need to be recognized. And we need to be told that's the right way. Like a small child on a spiritual path, we can still fall. So what happens is when I send a lot of those messages, I make a lot of effort to send those, and a lot of money is sent, because it's a lot of people to send SMSs to, and it takes hours. But it's worth the effort because it can change someone's life. It can change someone's thought. People say, oh, give you a number, put it on the SMS. They think, oh, I don't want to give my number. They don't understand the work that goes behind it and the motivation and the benefit. Sometimes people have a blue day, a rainy day, and they get a wonderful Dharma SMS. It just brightens up everything, and it changes their path. It benefits. So when we benefit or we help, we donate anything towards the growth of the Dharma, any way, even going there once or twice a week to help clean statues or put jewelry on it or sweep up, what it is this. It's an expression of your compassion, and it's your expression that you wish to increase this compassion. Why? Effort will lead to results. And when you do things within the Dharma institution that has to do with the body, speech, and mind of the Buddha, it can only generate merits for you to transform your body, your speech, and your mind. Very simple. So when we clean a Dharma institution, we're cleaning our body, speech, and mind. And it says that right here. Today's teaching, I'm going to base it on His Holiness the Dalai Lama. The annual talks that he gave at the Molam Festival, which is a New Year's festival in Lhasa. And these specific teachings were taught by His Holiness, the great 13th Dalai Lama. To me, whether they're the 14th, 13th, 5th, 6th, it doesn't really matter. The Dalai Lama is the Dalai Lama, and to me, his mind stream is pure. So whatever incarnation he gives the teachings doesn't really matter to me. So anyway, today's basis I'm going to give, as I have outlined for you, is by His Holiness. The teachings he gave during the festivals, during the New Year's. Because Tibetan New Year's is not about, it has that, but it's not around about just wearing nice clothes and going here and, you know, and celebrating and giving ang paos. They all do that. Tibetan way of celebrating New Year in Chinese is very similar. The language is different. The colors are different. But it's very similar. But for Tibet, which is deeply entrenched in spiritual practice, Not everybody's spiritual, but the place is entrenched. The new year is started out by something even more auspicious for whole future life in samsara, future lives, which is to receive the Dharma, to listen to the Dharma, to have the Dharma. So to receive Dharma teachings during that time is extremely auspicious. Why? It kind of imprints your mind for that whole year. Why do we make New Year's resolutions? We hope that we started off well, it's an imprint. Actually, time is timeless. Time is not intrinsically set. January 1st, December 31st, we call it the New Year's. Actually, before, you know, making calendars and all that, there's no time. You know, when do you make a resolution? So we shouldn't wait till New Year's, because that's something made by time again. But for auspicious reasons, for most of us who's attached to time and place and color and the five senses, New Year's is a very auspicious time, so His Holiness gives it. Some of us, they think, oh, well, His Holiness is not my teacher. It doesn't matter. You didn't meet the Buddha either. You didn't meet Lama Tsongkhapa either. It doesn't mean their teachings are not valid. The Dalai Lama, if you have the great fortune, can be your teacher. If he's not your teacher, it doesn't matter. It doesn't make his teachings invalid. So we may think, what do we need to listen to that teacher? And some people say, oh, I don't want to listen to this teacher. I don't want to listen to that teacher. I disagree. Why? Whatever the teacher's personal lineage, personal preference, personal hobbies and skills, personal likes and dislikes, personal practice, personal, rituals, doesn't concern us. Whatever their personal practice is definitely done by motivation of compassion. Because there's not one way up the mountain, there are many ways up the mountain. And so during in samsara, you always have conflict. Even within religious institutions, you have conflict. If you look at Christian institutions, there's so many sects of Christianity. All are valid, but all say they're not valid. Each other is not valid. What's the difference? Even within the Hindu sections of India, the higher Hindu masters and higher Hindu practitioners, no difference. But the lower ones, the normal Tom, Dick, and Harrys, they always make conflict. Always. Same thing in Buddhism. The different northern schools, the southern schools. Now we have the western schools, and then we have the eastern schools. Where we don't do things like they did in Tibet or China or whatever anymore. We do it our Western way, like in America or whatever. And then we have, then on top of that, we have Northern and Southern schools. Then we have the three paths. Hinayana, Mahayana, Tantrayana. And then there's conflict constantly made by people who have no better things to do with their lives, I guess. And then within that conflict, then you have, within that school, the different traditions. Even within Mahayana Buddhism, Chinese Buddhism, you have many different traditions that are valid. And then on top of that, I don't know too much about those countries. I've heard a little bit, so I can't comment too much. But within the Tibetan tradition, you have four traditions. Within the four traditions, you have different traditions again. Within the Kagyupa traditions, some can get along, some can't get along in the past, so they broke up into 16 divisions. There are 16 schools of Kagyu. So when you say Kagyu, you don't mention only one, 16 schools. Right now, the head of the Kamakaji school is His Holiness Kamapa. The head of the Drukchen Kagyu is His Holiness Drukchen Rinpoche. The head of the Drigung Kagyu is His Holiness Drigung Rinpoche. They're all equal. But you only hear there, there, you don't know about that. Then even within the Sakya school, you have two houses. And they take turns in ruling the Sakyas. One house is now moved to America in Washington. One is in India, the current one. So they switch. Then, within the Gelugpa also, you have which teacher, which school, which college, which monastery. There's always divisions. And then, currently, then there's this whether we should actually meditate and practice or just learn and study, this debate. And people say, I don't want to learn and study because it's so dry. And some people say, no, we need to learn because we don't know what we're meditating on. There's always this debate. Then we have teachers. When one teacher becomes successful and well, it hurts the eyes of other students and other places, other institutions. Why? I have no idea. Then when one place is not doing well, it also hurts them too. And then they say, see, we told you it's not good. Then if it's good, there's something wrong. You see, when there's nothing wrong, they find something wrong so that even though it's doing well, they want to make it not do well. Not do well. And then normal people like you and me who have no attainments, who have very little learning, who have invested very little time in study and meditation, we even have the audacity to criticize Dharma teachers, Dharma masters, in their 40s, in their 50s and 60s, where they've been monks their whole lives. Imagine, what would we like them to do? To keep quiet for the rest of their lives and not talk anymore? All the learning is wasted. What are we going to do? Go to a banyan tree and just sit under there and you know, play with the leaves? And then, which teacher is valid and not valid? Which teacher, what they practice, what their lineage, what their guru? All these questions. And ordinary nobodies like us, nobody meaning not that you're nobody, meaning you have no knowledge and background in Dharma. Well, quote, they said this, they said that, he said this, she said this, they said but. But the real issue is jealousy, discontent, and insecurity about what you're doing. The minute you criticize another tradition, another teacher, or you repeat the criticism, that is insecurity. Because you want to make sure you're doing the right thing. Because if you go to some place, you feel other people don't feel it's the right thing. Other people feel they're not. You feel a little insecure. Am I doing the right thing? Fear. We live on fear. So what I'm saying is, all Dharma masters are valid. As long as they hold their vows and commitments, especially to their lamas. And that they study and put time towards Dharma, and they engage in the meditational retreats. And they themselves are consistent in what they say and practice. And that their focus of their teachings is compassion, development of compassion, development of love and forgiveness. That's the essence of Buddha's teachings. That is how you check a teacher, if you think you're qualified to check a teacher. So when we criticize another sect, another teacher, when we hear these things, it affects us. It affects us because it's not really their fault, it's our fault. And then what happens is, in Tara's Tantra, she protects you from the eight fears. Droma Jigema means that Tara to protect you from the eight fears. And one of them is the fear of thieves. Physical thieves, so this form of Tara will protect you from thieves, thievery, bandits, robberies. You know, and in modern robberies, people cheat you out of money, you know, in investments and all that stuff. That's thievery also. And this form of Tara protects you. And then that's the outer protection of the Tara. The inner protection of this Tara that protects you from thieves is doubt. Doubt is considered the biggest thief. Why? We learn something, we put this much time, someone says something, go, ooh, and then we throw everything away. And then we go here and we learn something, blah, 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 everything's wonderful, hoo-ha, hee-hee, we're jumping up, and then all of a sudden we hear one little thing with no basis, or with basis, or without basis, or we don't have time to check the basis, we go, ooh, and then we go away. That is called, it's likened to a thief. When we worship this type of Tara, the real blessing we get, it is said in her Tantra, is the protection that wisdom arises and intelligence arises and clarity arises so that doubt is dispelled. And when doubt's dispelled, the inner thief is gone, and that's the real protection we get. Outer material objects can be replaced. Inner doubts that take away our knowledge and stops us from doing better things is a very big thief. Why? The essence of our life is gone. So what happens is that for me, under the great auspices of my teachers, His Holiness Kyabje Ling Dorje Chang, the tutor of His Holiness, His Holiness Dalai Lama, which I received my vows from many times, empowerments, transmissions, His Holiness Kyabje Song Rinpoche, His Holiness the great Ganden Tri Rinpoche, Jesen Jangbiao Shenban, the holder of the Ganden throne, His Holiness the Lord of the East, Shapa Chuje Rinpoche, His Holiness Kyabje Pabongo Dorje Chang, etc., etc. They have taught me to never criticize other teachers and other traditions. They have taught me many times in their Lamrim teachings not to make even one remark about another Dharma institution, Dharma center. Why? When we disparage other teachers and disparage other centers and disparage other traditions and other lineages, it is said in the Lamrim, when we disparage, it is equivalent to killing 1,000 Buddhas. It's impossible to kill a Buddha, but it is likened to, hypothetically, that if you can kill a Buddha, the demerits that arise from that, imagine. And everybody freaks out when we step on a cockroach. And some of us, doing teachings, if there's a mosquito, we compassionately send them to Buddha heaven. When we can sleep all day and not do any Dharma practice, and we can laze around, and we can just, you know, waste our time watching videos and talking about alcohol and entertainment. And that's pretty good. But when we kill a mosquito, all these Baptist Buddhists freak out. None of us can cast the first stone. None of us. None of us can cast any stones. My point is this, is that when we criticize or we're able to verbalize, it takes our attainments backwards. If you listen and watch the people who criticize other teachers, if you watch them carefully, they're usually angersome. They're usually sneaky. They're usually not learned in Dharma, meaning in practice and meditation. They're usually the gossipy type. People who go to places for entertainment, social gatherings, you know, look for things because they really don't have much else to do. Because in Malaysia, everything's so rich and plentiful. You don't have to work out in the fields. You don't have to plow the fields with your yaks. So you have all this free time. It's fun. It's fun to listen to who did what and with who and where and when and how and whether they're right or wrong. It's very fun. I enjoy it too. I love new news. So what happens is that it's very important for all of us to never, never, even in a gesture or in any way, shape, or form, disparage any lineage, any teachers, any practice, any tradition. We cannot. Why? All teachers benefit a certain type of student. One teacher cannot benefit all. All types of mentalities. So there are many types of teachers, many types of dispositions, and many types of backgrounds for the many varied multifaceted types of students to help them. So when one Dharma center closes in the city, an example here, that could be hundreds and hundreds of people throughout those years that don't receive the Dharma that could have because they have some kind of affinity there. So if we say, oh, that Dharma center is bad, that teacher is bad, they're bad, the committee's bad, this bad, 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 and we help them by rumor to close or stay closed or take people away, we potentially take them away from enlightenment. And that is very heavy karma. So every day they're away from the Dharma, they could have potentially practiced, or they would have been with their teacher. You collect that downfall. And then, on one hand, Rinpoche, 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 Rinpoche. Everybody falls to hand. Everybody. Even if you didn't hear about it, Rinpoche, Rinpoche, Rinpoche. They set up stadiums, you know, in the hundreds of thousands and thousands of people go there, and they say Rinpoche, everybody kowtows and bows. What is a Rinpoche? What is all that? You see, when our mind is settled down, like a monkey sitting on the forest floor, a jungle floor, calm, yeah, it's a Rinpoche. The minute a banana falls, it's helter-skelter. The monkey mind jumps here and there. Why is that? Fear. Non-confidence that arises from ignorance, that arises from not studying. So when we have this teacher or that teacher, that teacher, this teacher, like our parents, whatever people say or do or comment or criticize, it doesn't really matter. You know why? They are kind to us. And they teach us the right way. And they're beneficial to us. So like that, when we find a tradition that matches us and a particular style and teacher that matches us, we should embrace it. And if it benefits us, and the most important criteria is, does it benefit us? If it benefits us, we don't need to show off to other people and brag, and we don't need to defend either. We don't need to. Why? We're living in samsara. It's like a hospital. In the Dharma centers, there are many people with different levels of minds. Many different levels. So whatever people want to say and think about this tradition, that tradition, we should never get involved. Why should we never get involved? It's not a matter of getting involved in politics or non-politics. It's a matter of getting involved in your enlightenment. You should actively follow the path of your enlightenment, which is speech that benefits, thoughts that benefit, and body actions that benefit. So if we disparage another teacher, in the end, we look ridiculous. You know why? It's like throwing an eggshell at a big boulder. An egg at a big boulder, a raw egg. It's equivalent to that. But if there's a few people that goes around listening to your talks, and they're discouraged, you collect a demerit. Because if you totally want to observe and know the motivation and the practice and the purity, you need to be attained or learn it or both. If you are not, you're simply spreading gossip. So when we do that remember each time, as it says in the Lamrim, check it out carefully. The Lamrim is not made up from some weird monkey in a forest. It was written originally by the great Indian master, Dipankara Srijana Adisha. So you check it out, that when we criticize, it destroys. It is equivalent to the merit of killing 1,000 Buddhas. Why? Because it has that kind of damaging effect on another person's continuity or continuum. So the best thing is this, is that if we don't find it wonderful and positive, we don't get involved compassionately. Because they can be a benefit to other people. They can be. Definitely they can be. So what happens is that, and whatever the Lama practices, whatever the Lama or lineage practices, whatever teachings, whatever the focus, some practice very much focuses on the preliminary practices. Some very much focus on tantras. Whatever they focus on is not for us to judge or look. I'll tell you why. We're not learned and realized. So if we should say something scathing and unnecessary or create doubt or animosity, the karma is very heavy. Knowingly killing a child or unknowingly, still a child is killed. So respect for other traditions out of clarity and supreme wisdom. Respect for other teachers of all traditions, all religions. Respect shown in controlling of one's body, speech, and mind. That's how you show respect. Is supreme Dharma practice. Why is that? In one way, it's tolerance. Tolerance to yourself. Not tolerance to the teacher. Oh, I don't like the Dalai Lama, and I'm practicing tolerance. But I'll try to like him. No, no. I mean, I'm not saying because he's a Dalai Lama, and you don't have to be tolerant of him. You have to look at the object. You see, you're not being tolerant toward the Dalai Lama or Buddha or, you know, one great master. You're being actually tolerant to yourself. Because usually not tolerant. You say things. You listen. So what happens is we need to check ourselves with our hearts. Does the teachings benefit me? Does it focus on the principles of Dharma? And can I do it? And if it's yes, 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 it's pretty much okay. And once you commit, then like His Holiness says in this book, that instead of running to many, many teachers, which distract, we run to a few, one if possible, and listen carefully and follow and absorb. Because if they're a real teacher, they will teach you the essence of the Dharma, which is applicable anywhere you go, any tradition. Why? How can Dharma teachings conflict with each other or contradict? The contradiction and conflict arises from samsara beings who do not understand Buddha's intention and words. They don't arise from Buddha. If Buddha's words conflict or contradict, it would have to point to the fact that he's unenlightened. So if he's unenlightened, we cannot call him a Buddha. Therefore, there is no refuge. Therefore, there's no karma, cause and effect, no future lives. The whole basis of our practice is gone. Completely gone. So I don't think we want to go that direction because, you know, if we debate it out, we're going to look pretty silly. So what happens is that it's better to respect and rejoice. The opponent of all that is to rejoice that they are doing Dharma work, they're doing Dharma practice on their level, their capacity, the best that they can. And the bigger they get, the more we rejoice. Why? More beings can enter the Dharma stream. And if there's a teeny little center and they're not doing too well, my philosophy has always been to help them quietly. I try to send students or quietly, like very secretly send things to help, to assist without letting people know. Why? Many levels sentient beings. Some want face. So give them face, but help the Dharma grow. I don't look at the committee. I don't look at the center. And as long as it's a Dharma institution that really benefits, then I do my best. And I've done that in the past, many, many institutions to help, to raise funds. Why? To me, it doesn't make a difference. I don't want to hear good, bad, negative, positive. I can observe myself. And I don't have to agree with what they're teaching, but as long as it benefits people, meaning it takes them to an enlightened path of compassion, I will support in prayers and whatever way I can. And I do that all the time. I do that all over wherever I go. In KL, in Malaysia itself, I've given help and donations to many centers, many places in the past. And many of my students, close, near, or far, will not know. Why? I want the Dharma to grow. So and most of the centers don't practice my tradition. So what? Doesn't matter. But if one is not doing well, we need to help. And the ones that are doing well, or on a material level, maybe emotionally, maybe spiritually, we can help them. We can give them knowledge, past books. We can give them free articles to give their students. We can give them images and statues to raise the awareness of the place, and also to bring awe in the students, and also to bring merits to the place, to make the place grow. We can do all that. Why? If our motivation is to make the Dharma grow, we're not talking about make my Dharma grow, because I don't have any Dharma, to make the Dharma grow, the Dharma. And we're not talking about Tsongkhapa's Dharma. We're not talking about Kadampa Dharma. Kadampa is Natisha. We're not talking about Hinayana Dharma or Mahayana Dharma. We're talking about Dharma. And I like that very much. Your mind becomes free. Your mind becomes easy. It becomes light. No one can disturb you. You cannot be disturbed. The thief within is gone. And you can continue your path. So like that, it's very, very important this day and age where human jealousies, frailties, unhappiness, anger, competition, money, all that they want, that they will manifest that even through religious institutions. Incredible. Incredible that they'll manifest that through religious institutions, that for the sake of their ego and their pride and their jealousy and their anger or their unhappiness towards another center of success, that they will actually disparage the teachers down to the students, to the committee, everyone. Why? Because they really don't care about Dharma. They care about themselves. Cannot. It's not a matter of respect or disrespect. It's a matter of having compassion for others, that they may be benefited. It doesn't necessarily have to be your way, that they may be benefited. If someone has some serious disease, and as long as they go into one of the hospitals in the world, that's great. Why be disturbed? They're going to a very great hospital like in Malacca, or they're going to some hospital in Los Angeles. We're happy. We don't say, oh, I hate Americans, and therefore they have to come to Malacca. And then, you know, on the way, the guy might die or get sicker. That's ridiculous to remove him from one hospital and say, oh, you know, that's not what I like. All hospitals are good as long as they have qualified doctors. So like that, Dharma is perfect and Dharma is good. But our ignorance, hatred, and desire and jealousy will make it manifest in many ways. To criticize teachers, my. Monks, Sangha, learned beings, to create obstacles for them, to make their center drop, to make the institutions drop, and to make their students create doubt in their minds. Oh my. That is the worst. Those type of beings that do that, those type of beings will take rebirth in the three lower realms. Why? Because they create others to take rebirth in three lower realms by creating doubt and chasing them away from the path. Very, very dangerous. And so, the opponent is rejoiced to think about the benefits and to be happy and to rejoice. Rejoice means what? Rejoice is the method to counter one's jealousy, which arises from, I did not get the benefit they did. It's a very, very powerful emotion. So my thinking always has been, and it's always prevalent in wherever I give teachings or whoever considers themselves like people who listen to what I have to say, I totally 100% encourage all Dharma traditions to grow, all Dharma teachers to grow. And I do not check into their practices. I do not check into who they are, what they do. It's none of my business. Why? I'm not the only valid practice in Tibet. It's impossible. Impossible. And Dharma centers have a very tough time in an environment that doesn't support its growth. Unlike some place like Tibet or Thailand, where the whole government and the people, everything supports, they all know because it's entrenched there for hundreds of years. China before. But not in new places. It's very hard to grow. It's very hard for a Dharma center to benefit. There's a lot of work and effort. And from your side, you have to have that type of aspiration from previous lives, have done something. And in this life, make a lot of effort to listen to Dharma and to be blessed by it. And the effort has to be applied to receive the fruitioning of what you listen to. Then from the side of the institution, how much work was put into even this kind of institution, small or big. Everything was done by someone. Everything was made by someone. Whether it was yourself or not, doesn't matter. Everything. Someone donated. Someone gave. Someone called. Someone weaved. Someone, you know, cleaned to have it all done. How much effort was put in just this place? So when we go to a Dharma center, we go to a Dharma institution, Dharma place, it is an honor Because so much causes and conditions are gathered together for us to waltz in and elegantly sit down and see whether Dharma suits me or not. Many great teachers in the past came to Lama Tsongkhapa's talks and sat on thrones equal to his. As they listened to his teachings, they stepped down quietly. Very, very quietly. So what happens is that even places like this is made from a lot of effort. So instead of thinking, I'm very kind to go to Dharma talks, you just think that I am very fortunate that so many people have been kind to make this available for me. And then from the side of the teacher has to sacrifice many things. The teacher has to sacrifice his own identity, his own ambitions, his own wants and needs, his own loneliness, or his own wish for wealth and an easy life or whatever. All that has to be sacrificed. Any type of personal ambition from the side of the teacher must be abandoned. Imagine that. They tell you just abandon whatever you've been working for, whatever you believe and think. Just imagine that. Never mind everything else. Never mind your house and car. And then on top of that, to abandon attachment to physical forms. To take on vows. Tremendous. And to purify and keep those vows. To be alert. And then on top of that, to learn and disassociate yourself from your lineage, from your family, and who you are and whatever you are. Not because you don't love them. To not distract your mind. And to spend months and months and years in meditation. With their body in pain, their legs in pain. And how much time did it take to learn to do that? And to sit through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of Dharma talks. And to write notes and to think and go back and contemplate. How many years of study? How many years of devotion? How much years of their time? Even a Dharma teacher to develop is very hard for them to develop. It takes at least 20 to 30 years. It's just in one lifetime to develop. And once they reach that spiritual fruitioning, that ability, that maturity to teach, to have the experience of the people, the country, the place, the culture, to have the language capacity, to have the knowledge and all the effort put into the knowledge, years gathered together. And then the teacher still maintaining an absolute abandonment of personal agenda, personal ambition. And to give up everything that every sentient being cherishes. To give up completely. To sacrifice it for the Dharma. Personal ambition. Even the teacher will not even use one plate or cup thinking that it belongs to them. They will dedicate it to the three jewels. They think it is borrowed from the three jewels. That they have no possessions. Some teachers have huge houses and huge ladrangs and huge palaces, you know, in Tibet, all that stuff. But they never think it belongs to them. They don't have any attachment towards it. They dedicate it to the three jewels and think it's on loan. That's how great masters like Panchen Lama and Karmapa, they have huge estates. They never go to hell because they never think that it's theirs. They don't have that attitude. They've abandoned it. And they give it away just like that. And so what happens is the teacher gives up all personal ambition and time. Real Dharma teachers, according to situation, do not charge. Do not take any money, but the knowledge they give you is worth so much money. Motivational talks, we go for that. How much do you pay? But the Dharma teacher takes their time out, takes the effort, plans, and then behind the Dharma talk, how much planning has been done to organize everything? How much? And then the sacrifice of years of training and learning and listening to the Dharma and serving the Lama, serving their Lama. It culminates into a Dharma teacher and who selflessly, continuously, enthusiastically, with perseverance, with your mentality, with your thinking, with your mind, with your attitude, still compassionately convey the Dharma to you. That type of Dharma teacher, we fold our hands to, we make three prostrations. Not to the person itself necessarily, but to the six paramitas that person is showing us. Effort, enthusiasm, patience. That's incredible. And towards something that is totally the teacher himself or herself really gets no direct immediate benefit. Who can do work like that now? To go work at a job and not get any pay. To listen to hundreds of human resource problems and complaints and difficulties year after year after year and find a solution and not get any reward. and to listen to politics and people who discourage you and put you down, and you know, they try to take your sponsors away, or they're jealous and they create rumors. So many obstacles. Then visas, traveling, health, finances. The teacher has to battle all of that to be there in one room to give you the Dharma talk. And how many times has a teacher fallen due to the other people's ignorance and hatred and jealousy, that they've fallen and stand up again, fallen and stand up again. And never giving up and continuously thinking, may they convey the Dharma to you. Year after year. And some teachers, even life after life after life after life, they forego their personal ambition, their personal agenda, their personal likes and dislikes. And they're born into places and situations and people who are weird, barbaric, who are very confrontational. And the worst place to give Dharma teachings, if I may say so with no offense to anyone in Tibet here or anyone, is to go to a country that's not entrenched in Dharma and to start from grassroots. Let me tell you, the teacher is begging for it. Begging. Reincarnation of the SMN teacher. These teachers don't wear red maroon robes. They wear black leather robes. They reincarnate to be tortured in lands. You know what's barbaric? Barbaric means selfish mind rules. Me, me, me rules. Money rules. Barbarism has nothing to do with you know how to use a fork and knife and you finish finishing school in England. It has nothing to do with barbarism. Barbarism is the total immersed mind of me. And everything to do is me. So to go to a barbaric land where the Dharma has not been entrenched and start all over to teach everything and to start continuously from bottom up, trust me, the teacher gets nothing back. Nothing. Nothing. And on top of that, the teacher will be scrutinized to check if they're honest, if they're perfect. Even if they sneeze, it has to be out of bodhicitta. Oh, he sneezes, not good motivation. Let's go to another teacher. Oh, yes. And then same people have the craftiness to check the teacher's act. They want to know. They want to hear. Mind games. And then some of them check the teacher's lineage. Oh, he belongs to that lineage. Oh, he belongs to this practice, that. And they even go to that kind of lengths to disparage the unexcelled practices and effort. Incredible. So for the teacher to be here, it's total sacrifice of personal ambition. And you see the teachers, I've seen many, and the dealings they have to do with their sponsors. That's a very big issue in countries that are barbaric. Barbaric. The dealing with sponsors and the control the sponsors have. A monster tyrant sponsor, or they will control the lamas and teachers. I've been in that situation before. They tried to put strings on me and puppet me around. Well, you know me, I kind of cut the strings and freaked out and left. And they try to use you to make money. They try to use you to bring reputation, because sometimes they have done things in their life they're not very happy about. So they open up a center, they can purify, so they need a lama there to attract the crowd. So if they attract the crowd validates what's happening. You know, if there's a big crowd, it validates it's good, that's all. And that's what people believe. Wrong, but that's it. And so, you know, they manipulate the teachers to the way they want things done so they look good. And if you don't do that, the teacher is bad, bad, bad. The teacher is good, 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 good. So the teacher is bad, we give him a lot of money and help him because he's doing what I want, which helps me to look good, which helps him to help me look better. But the minute they don't, we cut off the finances. Cut. The teacher is sent packing down the street with the bags he came from India, and he's standing on a bus stop looking for another sponsor, and hopefully he can survive the rain. But if they do what the sponsors want, oh, and I tell you, not all. Some sponsors are incredibly difficult. They buy you. They buy you over. That's what they think. But I've told some of them, look, I am a gigolo, but I can't go that far. I will give you everything I have except Dharma ethics and principles. If it doesn't benefit, I can't. So Dharma teachers, especially young ones and new ones, they're under the complete control of sponsors if the sponsors are negative. And I've seen teachers with fabulous sponsors, fabulous. Kepsa Sarumji and Banarumji, all that, they have fabulous, humble sponsors that take care and really want the Dharma to spread. And they figure, if I help this person, the Dharma spreads. And that people don't understand. People just don't understand. And then if another center sees a good sponsor, they say, let's tell them, you know what? That Rinpoche dyes his hair. And the sponsor's like, is it? You mean he's using my money to dye his hair? Is it? I mean, small things like that, they freak out. Oh, yes. All kind. You haven't. I tell you, I can make a whole sitcom out of this. Incredible. And then, you know, and then if they can't get the teacher, they get the people around them. If they can't get people around them, they get the tradition. If they can't get the tradition, they get the building. Whatever, you know, however it's get, because why? Ignorance, hatred, desire. So for a teacher to be in front of you, it's many years of sacrifice of personal agenda. Personal sacrifice sacrifice of personal goals, agenda, wants, and needs. And all the teacher's emotional wants and needs has to be shelved and put away. Because if any of that surfaces, ooh, that teacher is not enlightened. As if we're enlightened to guess if they're enlightened or not. And everything has to be put aside. They leave behind their countries, their identity, what they're comfortable with, and if you know, strut out into a barbaric land, a barbaric country with weirdos, weird hairstyle, weird clothes, or lack of clothes, weird language, weird customs. Weird not as a negative, as very foreign. And the teacher has absorbed the culture, the people, the language, their likes and dislikes. And the teacher has the unfortunate karma to be born among people who are international. Well, the teachers have to also be ani kofan. He's got to get along with everybody and understand everybody's culture. And juggle that, and juggle finances, and juggle sponsors, and juggle students, and juggle the weirdos, and rumors, and attacks. Juggle all that to be in one room to convey the holy so that you don't suffer. And that's why in the Tibetan tradition, my Lama is the Buddha, my Lama is the Dharma, my Lama is the Sangha. Tremendously. So to be in one room to receive the Dharma talk, yeah, it's fun, you know, there's jokes, there's fun, it's like a circus, and you know, we can relax, and we can kick back, and we get a free drink, maybe, and you know, let's go there. But we have to think of a deeper issue. And why, from your side, there's so much effort from previous lives till now, from the side of the teacher, from the side of the place, why? It must be compassion. Anybody who was to give up their personal agenda, it's compassion. Even from the side of the students, to give up personal likes and dislikes to be at another place and to sit in Dharma teaching, it's also some sort of compassion. Some sort. Beginnings of that. A sprouting. And that's wonderful. So what happens is that all of this arises from compassion for others. An ultimate sense. And therefore, to be in one place, to be with one teacher, to listen to the holy Dharma, we have to meditate profoundly on the causes and the conditions and the effort and the time that was put for that to happen. Incredible. Incredible. So when we go to a Dharma talk, we should think it is truly, punsun tsokpa means the all auspicious gathering of karma from this side and this side. Gathering that we can receive a Dharma talk. And that's why we hold the Dharma talk so supreme. We make thrones for the teacher. We make canopies for the teacher. We put beautiful offering objects. We make everything comfortable and nice. Why? In respect to the effort of the teacher and also in respect to what we will receive. The victory banner on top of the teacher is called a hari. What is that? It's a symbol of royalty. In ancient India, during Buddha's time, we actually carry karasiwarada, parasols. To shade the king from the sun. But the king doesn't go out in the sun. But it's symbolic that we treasure this person this much because he's so good in government and he rules the country and gives us so much pleasure and happiness and good crops or whatever. So we respect. So in the Dharma tradition, when we put a banner over the teacher, it is in respect and putting a banner over the teacher. Yes, the person can be very accomplished. But even more so, the compassion that we wish to achieve. So we're putting a banner, a victory banner, a victory parasol over the teacher in reference to what is being taught and what is developed. And when we put that, the people who, okay, let's make it simple, the people who even sponsor this and put it up, they create the causes of gaining the qualities to receive that. Meaning what? If you have a banner over you, it is symbolic that you have compassion or you will engage in the practice of compassion to reach that stage of Buddhahood. So when we even offer a banner, so sometimes people have pujas and said, oh, you have to decorate temples. It sounds very, you know, like, what? Decorate temples. It sounds kind of weird. Temples are supposed to be unattached. But it's not a matter of decorating the temple for the sake of decoration. It's recognizing the qualities that this place will produce. So when we put that over a teacher, it's not just a teacher, oh, he's a Rinpoche, we put up a banner, and that's tradition, that's Tibet, we don't have it, the teacher freaks out, we freak out, everybody freak out, and it doesn't look like a Tibetan temple, no donations, the end, let's go home. No, it's not like that. You put a banner over that, and those who even sponsor it, they do a prayer. The reason a person has a banner may achieve those reasons, full Buddhahood. Then we put a throne. Why do we put a throne? Because if your teacher is short and he sits on the floor, you can't see him. No, that's not the reason. The students are short, the teacher is not. It's very rare I met a student taller than a teacher. Very rare. So anyways, it is, a throne is representative of royalty. Royalty means to be more cultured, can bear more difficulties, can take up the responsibility of many. So we respect royalty because they can do more for others, double, triple. That's why we respect royalty. So like that, a lama or a teacher is likened to royalty, not as a king of royal line, but of an enlightened nature. So when we put thrones adorned beautifully with silks and brocades, all that stuff, if we're able to, if not in visualization, what happens is we create the causes for us to receive those items that we uphold. So everything, because we've been talking about, you know, all these items and Tibetan things and wah, they're all related to full enlightenment. Full. Everything relates to making offerings to enlightenment, to achieve enlightenment. Everything. And that's why today, what I wanted to talk about was to appreciate the Dharma. It is entertaining. It is fun. It tells the truth and it's wonderful. But at the same time, if we understand the effort that's been put in, it humbles us. It also inspires us that, wow, people did this much for me without expecting anything back. Incredible. It takes dedicated people who are selfless to work in the Dharma for the sake of others. Because you know what? In the Dharma, you do not get a thank you. You do not. People waltz in and waltz out because why? They're gracing you. I've seen people like that. They walk in and waltz out, you know. But it doesn't matter because there's all types of people everybody needs to learn the Dharma. So everything that has to do with the Tibetan tradition, I can say that confidently because I'm from that. And I'm not saying that out of racial pride. Is some sort of progression of collection of merit or reminder or awareness towards the path of perfection. That's what it is. So, with that type of motivation, we should think, if I listen to the Holy Dharma, I'm extremely fortunate. It comes from many, if you don't believe in previous lives at this moment, it's all right also. But in this life alone, how much effort was made for us to be in one room and listen to the Dharma. How much effort? So for us to waltz in sometimes, we can make it, some we cannot make it. You know, I can't make it, I need to survive. I can't go to the Dharma because you know what? My dog's previous owner's sister's mother died. I can't make it to Dharma, you know, because it rained, there's going to be a little bit of traffic. You know, I'm not making it up because why? Is their people not bad. Their habituation is very strong. In fact, these people, we show more compassion. More compassion. Why? We all need it. We all are the objects. We all are the results of compassion. Our parents, our teachers, somebody. We all are the results of that. So it's time to show it. And at the same time, you know, we can't make Dharma teeth because of schedules, livelihood, whatever. We all say that. And some of us even think when we're in the Dharma, we're in it just for the time being when things are all right, when we get something better, see you later. Why is that? It's not that people are bad because they're inherently used to making themselves unhappy. Making themselves angry, unhappy, and habituations that pull them away from things that are good. That's normal. Normal not as in good normal. Normal is that's samsara. So what happens is, Dharma totally goes against that in a positive way. Positively. So when we're in a Dharma talk, incredible. The preparation behind it, the appreciation we feel. And you know what happens? When a human being appreciates something, the mind opens up. The mind opens up. And when it opens up, what happens? You're in for a brainwashing session from Tenrinji. No. Tenrinji has no intention of brainwashing you. I'll tell you why. Tenrinji do not like to have a big circus. No, he does not. You see, one clown is enough. So if Tenrinji opens your mind and brainwashes you, he's going to have to open a commune. He's going to have to open some reservation. He's going to have to open some huge temple somewhere and be in charge and manage hundreds of people. Tenrinji doesn't like that because Tenrinji, unlike real Dharma teachers, hasn't given up his personal agenda 100%. So what happens is this, is that Tenrinchi doesn't want to brainwash you. Tenrinchi wants to wash your brain so that you can learn the Dharma and you can get lost and do your own little practice somewhere in the cave, in your temple, in your house, whatever. And don't call and disturb Tenrinchi, except when there's talk, you come and listen. Why? Because Tenrinchi already told you, one clown in a circus is enough. We don't need a whole bunch of clowns. We got Bozo, Smozo, Shozo, Lozo, Wozo. What do we need? A place full of clowns, and they all come to you. And you should listen to the things that Bozo the clown has to listen to from Shmozo and Lozo and Wozo. Oh, it's incredible. It's incredible, years of it. And sometimes Bozo the clown loses the compassion and wants to strangle them on the trapeze. Strangle. Or they cut the reins of the elephant and hope they trample that clown. Oh yes, you don't know what Bozo has to go through. And then Bozo goes through. Bozo is surrounded by traitors. The minute Bozo doesn't make them laugh, they're gone. They're gone. They're out there screaming blue murder, and they're telling everybody in the whole world how bad Bozo was, how they were abused, and they were hurt, and they were used, and like, who want to use you? Who, eek. Take a look in the mirror. Would you want to use you? Think about it. And then when Bozo the clown makes them laugh again, they all come back. Oh, we love Bozo. You know, like a birthday party. We love Bozo. We love Bozo. And then it goes in and out like that, you know. It's nonstop. So why does Tenrinchi not want to brainwash you? Because you'll be dependent on him. And Rinpoche doesn't like you to be dependent on him because Rinpoche likes to be a dependent, not dependent on. See, being dependent on means he has to take responsibility. Oh no. Life after life after life. And guess what? We meet again and again and again. And do you think Tenrinchi wants to see you again in a future life? He makes it so difficult in this life to connect with him. You think he wants to meet up with you in a future life? And you know why? Not because you're bad. Because he just wants to kick back somewhere in a Tibetan, you know, a scene that's nice and easy, have big sponsors, and, you know, just be happy. Well, that's what he thinks. No. There's no brainwashing going on with me. I have no agenda for that. I can care less if I have a bunch of groupies following around. In fact, I hate it. You can ask some of my close people that, that assists me. If I see somebody I know, I run. If I get a phone call, I don't pick up. I have a phone to have SMSs. I rarely give or take calls, rarely. Why? Then you gotta be their friend. And you know, and I have a phone because I have a list of people I SMS to that I like to torture and harass and ask questions and scare them because it's fun. I need to take my frustration out on somebody, don't I? I need to. So when I'm not happy because Bozo the clown is not being, nobody makes him laugh. So he entertains himself with SMSs. Isn't that fabulous? Oh, it's wonderful, wonderful. And some people in the circus don't get the direct number, so they get it indirectly from other people. And so that's even more fun because that depends on that person to get it to Bozo. If Bozo don't get it on time, you're going to get it. Isn't that wonderful? It's a whole manipulation scheme to keep you away. So I'm not interested whether you follow my tradition or whatever. Why? I don't need you to validate what I do. I have all my lineage lamas to validate it. Back to the Buddha. If Song Rinpoche says it's fine, it's fine. If Trigyan Rinpoche says it's fine, it's fine. I don't need you to tell me, oh, I couldn't be bothered. Why couldn't I be bothered? When a little cockroach is telling the elephant I can step on you, the elephant looks at the cockroach and goes like that. So I'm a cockroach and my gurus are like elephants. I just keep quiet. So what happens is this is that no, there's no brainwashing. And then how can anyone be brainwashed, really? Too intelligent. You're not a bunch of farmers, you know? Sugarcane or durian farmer. Okay, one durian farmer here. But anyways, you're not a durian farmer. Where, you know, you're primitive and you're crude and you're smelly and, you know, you sit out in the sun all day so you're fried. Or you're some weird accountant. You sit there and play with calculators all day and figures and numbers till your brain gets fried. What's the difference? And then when you're, you know, the worst job is accountancy. It's the worst. All accountants have a certain look. No, I'm not kidding. They're not evil, but they have this certain look. They all wear glasses. Always. That's one. All accountants wear glasses or contacts. You just observe. Unless they just got out of accountancy school. They just got their certificate because they paid for it, whatever. And then all accountants look at you because they have this instinctive kind of look like you're cheating them. They're always figuring out you're cheating them. And then if you go out with accountants, there's always this, you know, how much? And everything surrounds numbers. Everything. And how much? And then they always have this reserved, quiet look, because in their job, finance is the most private, so they have to be very reserved and not show any emotions. So that spills over in their personal life, where they look reserved, unemotional, cold, and narrow, and they have that look, although they're not. And they have trained themselves that way. Why? Because in their job, they have to be that way to protect and to respect the figures of the company. So it's natural. Very rare do you see accountants smile in public. Very rare. Unless it's a promotion. Very rare. And usually accountants are very, very uptight, very, very worried, very nervous, very, very. And the only time that you can figure out that an accountant is okay or not is when you give them one or two drinks and they let their hair down. And sometimes you regret it. Oh, but account, and then imagine being married to the accountant. Oh my God. They'll calculate perfectly when you can have sex, when you can eat dinner. Everything is perfectly timed. I feel accountants are reincarnations, the emanations of the Big Ben in London, controlled by time. So accountants are types of people that I try to keep away. But then it doesn't last for long because I go back and read the sutras and say, no, you have to love all sentient beings and accountants. So they're all right. And then there's the next group of people that Bozo the Clown tries to keep away. It's kids of families that don't let the kids work because they're precious little baobaos, you know, precious little treasures. And these little runts and rats and monsters never work, and whatever work they did was just because they're bored. And, you know, whatever they need, they call up mama, and they have everything. They have their wonderful clothes, wonderful everything, and they don't have to do anything. And they strut into the Dharma and go, oh, I thought this was a club. Well, I guess it's no clubs tonight, so I'll hang out here for a while and have fun. These people, all right, I call them people because they have one face, two arms, and two legs. They fit the definition. When they need something, they call up mama. Anything goes wrong, they cannot take any responsibility. They cannot move on. They cannot do anything. Everything must be taken care of for them. Even you have to, you know, manipulate their jaws to make them chew their food and then slap them to swallow. Oh God, this is another class of people. And then these people come from small towns, small villages. They speak weird language. They send you horrible SMSs. And everything you say, they misconstrue and they get mixed up because it's their fault and it's not yours. And then, you know, they think on this level, and of course you're on this level, and they don't understand you. And these people from small, oh, horrible. And then fat people, oh, I can't stand fat people. You know what I hate? Watching a fat person walk across the room and everything bounces. And you go, oh my goodness. And then they tell you that, you know, they don't have a lot of money, they don't have this, they don't have that. But what, in China, when you're fat, you're prosperous, mean got money what? Got money. You ever seen a poor fat person? I mean, really, really poor, starving. Go to concentration camps. Is there anybody fat here? Don't you hate watching fat people walk across the room? They're fat, they bounce all over the place. And sometimes they bounce in all the wrong places that you don't want bounce. Sometimes they walk by, they knock you over. They don't want to. And they always have this look. They're just fat. And you always think of taking them to, you know, I don't know, some place where they eat people. Compassionately, of course, because they feed a lot of starving, you know, natives. And then skinny people. Really skinny people. They get on my nerves, too. They have long necks, thin little bodies, thin little fingers, thin little legs. They look pallid. And it's like, and then, don't you hate it? They wolf down, you know, buffets, and they sit there, and they're still hungry. And you eat one grain of rice, and you gain 5 kgs. Don't you hate them? I've always had a wish, you know, may all the skinny people drop dead. Reincarnate as fat. I mean, the prejudices go on. That's how our mind operates. And we look at it, we build into it, and the prejudice goes on and on. Doesn't stop. Doesn't stop at all. Where does it have to stop? We don't make other people stop. We stop ourselves. We start here. We start here. And the best place to start is respect of Dharma, Dharma traditions, Dharma teachers, Dharma practices, anywhere, because that's the highest. So we start there, everything else is covered. And that's great practice. Why? Because it benefits. So when we listen to a Dharma talk, we should think we're very lucky. And I'm not saying this to make you feel you're lucky, because it really is like that. It really is. Because I worked in Dharma centers and in the monastery for many years, and I've seen where the Dharma centers go through, here and abroad, in the West, America, wherever, how much effort they have to put through. Sometimes they can't survive. You can't believe how much they go through. How much personal sacrifice and devotion that students have to get it together for other people. Incredible. I've seen it. I even get requests from Dharma centers now to help them. Even now. So what happens is that deep appreciation opens the mind. When the mind is open, you cannot be brainwashed, but you are open to knowledge. Open to knowledge. And that's very, very important. When someone gives you a vegetable, you don't immediately think what you can do with it. You ask them, what can I do with it? Because they might have other options on how to cook it that might be even better, easier, simpler. So if you have a pre-focused kind of thought of, you know, that I'm going to cook it just like that, then you cut everything out. That's why it's very important to be open, not stupid. Open. Open means to non-critically listen. And always check, does this lead to compassion? Does this lead to the development of mind? So in Dharma teachings, what's the criteria is, has to lead to compassion. A free mind. It has to lead to that. Always. And then, of course, without saying tatapa, or full enlightenment of a Buddha. And it's very, very important. So Dharma centers work hard, Dharma students work hard, Dharma teachers, everyone. There's a lot of effort to get together. A lot of effort. And Dharma teachers don't need thanks. Real Dharma teachers don't need thanks. What they need is this. Is the four types of offerings. As I mentioned SMS the other day. The four types of offerings are the supreme types of offerings one can make to a spiritual teacher. Supreme. Why? Because when you are not unhappy and not suffering and you are all right, that is the greatest joy for a Dharma teacher. And when you yourself do not have to take endless rebirths and suffer again and again and be tossed around here and there, a teacher's compassion is much greater than that of a mother for a child. A mother can give up everything for a child, and we think that's wonderful because we don't see any compassion higher than that. But a Dharma teacher's compassion is that of a mother for a child, that intense, but for everyone that Dharma teacher meets. The minute the Dharma teacher lays their eyes on you, they immediately think, how can they benefit you short-term, long-term? How can they skillfully benefit you? A real Dharma teacher will think like that and not let go. Never let go, never give up, never. Why? The intensity of a... And you think, well, how can someone have that kind of intensity? It's possible. An example, a mother for a child. A mother can give up her life for a child. Definitely. So that's pretty great. But much, much greater is a real person, a bodhisattva's, a bodhisattva warrior's attitude of having that attitude toward everyone that they meet, directly, indirectly. To develop that type of motivation. And it becomes consistent, it becomes firm and continuous. And it's not based on the object, but the subject. Meaning, their compassion not based on you and how you react. Whether you're nice to them or not, it doesn't disturb them. Not at all. Not at all. And that's pretty incredible. Why is that? Lifetimes of development. Lifetimes. Lifetimes. Incredible. Some people cannot even think about the vastness of a teacher's compassion, even go near it. I'll tell you why. Not because they're bad or stupid. No knowledge, no practice, no instruments to gauge from their side. No ability to gauge. But it's unending the compassion. Unending. So like that, that type of compassion can be developed. It can be. When that type of compassion is developed, the benefit you bring to others is nonstop. If nothing, you don't bring harm. And anything used by yourself, anything in your presence will be a benefit directly, indirectly to others. Definitely. Due to the motivation. Remember, actions, this is the key here. Actions is not intrinsically positive or negative. It is the motivation. Eating can be positive or negative. Exercise, which we all think is wonderful, can be positive or negative. It is not intrinsically one way or the other, positive or negative. It is not. So what happens is everything arises from a Dharma talk. The knowledge, the discipline. Even sitting in a Dharma talk for many hours, we're tired, we worked the whole day, we got up early. Even pushing ourselves in a Dharma talk physically creates resilience. Remember the first time you attended Dharma talks, and then now, big difference. Even to sit disciplined and respectfully in front of the teacher, not to slouch, not to have weird positions and all that, is a creation of one's own mental ability and discipline. Of course, when you just come into Dharma talk, you got to sit there in full lotus position and never move again. Well, on the way out, they're going to carry you out because you're not going to move again. I mean, that's ridiculous. I'm talking about a gradual process. We can be just as disciplined and respectful to the Dharma sitting on a chair or sitting in full lotus position. Both is not intrinsic. No. But, to be in a Dharma talk, it's discipline our body, our speech, and our mind. Some of us have sticky butt vits, you know, we're just totally, we live for nicotine, we take refuge in nicotine. We have nicotine on our altars to make offerings to it. Without nicotine, that's it, because you know what? We were born to suck all the nicotine from every sentient being. You know, some of us just love sticky butts. And to sit through hours not having a sticky butt, those people definitely value something. And their addictions can be under control. You know why? It shows you the power of the mind. Definitely. And some of us say, once we go to Bozo the Clown, we ain't going to see outside until dawn. We're going to be there for hours. And then next day, they're sleepy, they're groggy at work. For the accountants, they hate it. They hate the teacher because the whole day they may stab him with my pen. But even those people who feel the effects of tiredness the other day, they can see the benefits of Dharma. Why? It's worth it. Nothing comes without effort. And then some of us drive very far away. Drive very far back. Some of us don't have cars because we have phobias, you know. I don't know, reincarnations of pharaohs or something. I don't know, or don't want to drive because you know they feel that you know they want to contribute to the public service and works. How compassionate! We have all types of people out there, and for them to take a little taxi across town and you know suffer the potential of being robbed and raped along the way, which some of us say you wish, but anyways, it's a lot of effort because they value. Oh yes. So all of us are compassionate. Don't say you're not. It's a put down. It's a selfish escape. All of us are compassionate in some way or another. All of us. What we need to do is how much we have to increase it. Where there is no compassion, may we develop it. Where there is, may it grow. Where there's a compassion that's distorted, may it become cleared. It's applicable. So what happens is when we think about all that, respect for Dharma teachers and institutions grow. We don't discourage or disparage out of, that's the wrong thing to do, bad karma, I'm going to hell. Not that we really believe in all that. But from logic, we say, it's like that. Then there's karma, we have an extra added benefit. How incredible. And to concentrate during Dharma teachings, there's a type of spirit that I read the other day. There's many classes of spirits that actually, when we do certain things that disturb them, you know what they do to us? Doing beneficial activity, especially doing Dharma activity, Dharma talks or whatever, we fall asleep. I read that in Lama Sopa's manual the other day. We specifically fall asleep. And we can't help ourselves, we can't control ourselves, and even if we slept, 24 hours and we show up, we're still sleepy. It's a sign we've disturbed that spirit. One of the causes. So it's like that. Getting to the Dharma, the building's built, the Lama's here, you kidnapped him from Tibet, he's here, and he's got a gun in his back. If he doesn't teach, he's going to get it. And then the sponsors are there, you better teach or I'm taking my money back. And then the students are like, I'm not going to be your students anymore because, you ain't the only center in town. See you later, Buster. And then all these threats. So the teacher, it's what I'm trying to say is, if we really appreciate, clarity comes, understanding comes, and the strength of will comes. It all arises. So the more we listen to the Dharma, the clearer it becomes. And that's what I like. I don't engage in a lot of rituals. I don't know a lot of rituals. I'm not interested in a lot of rituals. I used to avoid rituals in the monastery. Ritual, I'm a bai. I call in sick. Of course, the monastery knew I was lying. I was at home doing Ubaja Sata Hum, purifying my lies. Oh, I can't, rituals all day. They chant, I'm like, I don't know why, I just have this. I like rituals, but I like a short, quick, fast, because I figure, if I can meditate it in that speed, why should I sit there for 12 hours a day? I mean, it's wrong of me to think, but... And one time I slipped, I actually thought, well, I'm a reincarnation, I meditated for a lifetime, so I can skip out this time. Evil, isn't it? evil. And you know, one time the disciplinarian actually said, some people think they're Rinpoches, so they don't have to show up. I was like, oh, he's psychic. But in any case, my point is this, is that, yeah, we appreciate and we love and we make an effort. And your effort is not wasted. Do you know why? Being here together is a cause for us to develop compassion. Compassion which will extend into our friends, our lovers, our family, and people who've been kind to us. And it will extend into forgiveness, making lightness of the mind. It will extend into respect. It will extend into harmony. All this will be the cause of listening to Dharma talks, real Dharma talks. I don't talk about politics. I don't talk about yay or nay. I don't talk about right or wrong. I'm not interested. Why? That's not Dharma. We have enough of that in the normal world. We don't need that here. So what happens is, that's what you'll get from Dharma talks. And the more you listen, I promise you, the more you attend and make effort, the clearer your mind will become. And then later, when you come across different type of hypothetical situations, you'll be able to figure it out yourself with the knowledge you have. Not from guessing, or maybe from knowledge. And that is incredible. And then in between Dharma talks, if we actually engage in sadhanic practices, within the sadhanic practices, do some practices that control the mind. And then once a year, at least do retreats, once a year, to retreat from samsara and to focus on a specific practice and do retreats. Incredible. Then in between that, to do some readings. We can request our teachers, the senior students, to give us recommended readings. And then on top of that, to hold the refuge vows. Why? With vows, the effort that you put into whatever you do is much greater than without vows. The result is different due to the aspiration and the promise. To take refuge vows, to have refuge vows, and to take refuge vows not simply for individual liberation of the smallest scope. I'm sorry, individual liberation of the medium scope or the lowest scope, which is freedom from the fears of the three lower realms. And the highest scope, the best way to take refuge, is that not only are you in this situation, everybody around you is in that situation. So may everybody and myself be free from this kind of situation and to develop that courage and that heroic mind, which is what we call the bodhisattva. For others, we take refuge and to hold our refuge vows and to purify ones we have broken and to keep our samayas clean with our teachers, keep our samayas clean, hold our refuge vows and to have refuge, which is the basis of becoming enlightened, which is the basis of all the practices, must be there. To take refuge is most supreme. And to do our sadhanic practices every single day, to read, to identify with a deity, whatever deity we have, to identify. Why? When you identify with that deity, you're focusing your mind on something enlightened that gives you enlightened qualities. Whereas our usual practices, what we do is car, house, work, job, going home, cook, sleep, market, vegetables, you know, and our pets. Those are objects we focus on that doesn't bring much more deeper in samsara. But during the day, to take some time out to do our sadhanic practices, sadhanas, systematize, and to do our individual chanting. Chanting, not just verbally. Insight. Incredible. It is incredible. And then to do retreats once a year. If you can do twice, it's fabulous. You will see your mind transform and change. You will see. You will see wisdom and clarity arise. You will see stability. People who do retreats, they do it correctly and well. The best of their ability, sincerely. Even they do it incorrectly, but sincerely, it's okay also. You will see their mind calmer, open up more, be able to take more things. Definitely that happens. And the more they do, the better. Why? Retreats totally take you away from the normal activities that you do that make you the way you are. And it gives you a new method to become much better. Much, much better. And on top of that, during the retreat, the main purpose is to identify and to become close with the meditational deity. And becoming close means what? Starting to adapt their qualities. Adapt their qualities. On some level. So when we do retreats, it's very, very powerful because it helps us to identify and become close to a meditational deity. Now listen carefully. That actually reflects our ultimate nature, Buddhahood. So we are taking the result onto the path. So that's very incredible. Incredible. And along with that, in between, we can help Dharma centers. When we clean Dharma centers, as Holiness says, is very powerful purification. Very powerful. Why? Because everything you do for a Dharma Center is for others. It's so beneficial. It's so beneficial. Incredible. And when we give to a Dharma Center, we're giving to others. When we take from a Dharma Center, we're taking from others. So that's why when we think, oh, you did that to the temple, you took that from the temple, you like that from the temple. Oh, even Chinese people have a very strong, like, they don't know why, but it's in their culture to think, oh, it's not good when you do that to a temple. Why? Because everybody knows that temples, places of worship, benefit. So when we take away from it, it takes away from the benefit of others. So innately, that's wrong. So that's why serious practitioners, unless under very serious situations, they will offer. They will never take. Never. Why is that? They get more by offering than taking. Much, much more. So what happens is giving can be many levels. Helping, assisting. Consistency in a Dharma Center is very important. If you volunteer for a job or you've been asked to do it and you do it consistently, it's a great type of giving. Do you know why? You give to people who are not, and you show them that you can be, and it's a good way to go. It's a good example. Work gets completed. When work gets completed, many people benefit. Many, many people benefit. And then sponsors will be attracted. If you need finances, sponsors. Sponsors are not attracted by the lama, necessarily. It's attracted by the students. Because the sponsors see the students, not necessarily the lama. And after they meet the lama, they see the students. So the students are monsters, tyrants. You know, they're reincarnations of the Loch Ness Monster or whatever. You know, they're reincarnations of Sasquatch and Bigfoots. And they're scary and they're rude and they're unkept. And they're disrespectful. And they're uncouth, they're unmannered, and they have no effort. The sponsor can take a look and say, that lama is not very good. Because why? If he can't train up his own students, who can he train up? The sponsor is going to look different, might think, oh, maybe this lama is very compassionate to take those type of people and keep them near. Why? They would have no other way to have liberation. So for those type of people, they need to be very humble with their lama and humble with the students and be very serious and very humble. Never to joke about or make in jest their fallings and failings. Why? They reconfirm it. And they make it justified to other people. It's okay for me to be like that. No, it's not okay. Because it brings you harm. It brings you harm. One day I want to write a book about Dharma Centers, interaction in between, interaction within. Because it's a new phenomenon. Hundreds of Dharma Centers spring all around the world. Not tens, hundreds. And they become big institutions, huge, huge. It's a phenomenon that will grow bigger and bigger because it's the second renaissance of Lord Buddha's teachings, as predicted. So what happens is that we don't know how to deal with Dharma centers, finances, people, sponsors, students, committee. It's very hard. And then inter-center relationships. I would like to write a book about that in the future to share my what I've learned, what I've seen. In hopes that in future, other Dharma centers can read it, other Dharma people can read it, and create more harmony and understanding. Because for new Dharma students, sometimes it can be quite daunting. Quite daunting. So that will help very much. The relationship between Dharma centers, why, what we do inside. We explain it to people, just like I've explained it to you in short just now. It gives you a lot of knowledge. I would love to do something like that. I don't want to write it myself, but I would like to put it in a tape recorder and have somebody else write it. And publish it, and sponsor it, and get it out there, and then put my face on the billboard. I love it. I figure, why should I do all the work? I should share the merits. See? Aren't I kind? You're a monkey on the forest floor. I'm a monkey in the tree, but we're still monkeys. What? But I'm in the tree, by the way, so I'm free of predators. So if Geraldine, the rhinoceros, comes around, well, I'm on the tree. You get it, not me. Isn't that wonderful? But we're still monkeys, so I'm not that much better. But I am kind because I throw bananas to you. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm throwing you bananas. Aren't I nice? And some students I don't throw. I aim at them. Isn't that wonderful? And some of you, you know, get a banana and complain, why so small? Why so big? All types. So that is about Dharma centers. That is about motivation, why we go to the Dharma teaching. And you know, if you have that and you understand that, then I give you the Dharma teaching. It goes in. And it stays. For me not to talk about any of this and just say, oh, Dharma, blah, 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 you probably think, oh, can you shut up and talk about what we came here to listen to? You can think about that. You might think that, yes, but will it really go in if you don't understand the effort put in, the appreciation? Definitely. So my talk today, regarding Dharma centers and the effort in ourselves and the teachers and the institution is about compassion and why we make it. Why we make it. Very, very important. Very, very important. And to create harmony. The secret for Dharma to grow is harmony. So that's why in the future, I'm going to do everything I can. You're going to see. To make Dharma grow everywhere. All the time. Wherever Dharma is, whatever. I always pray for a lot of money. Always. All I do is pray for the money. Once the Buddha, one of the Buddhas, if they ever see me walking around, they say, there's the money lama. Oh, yes, I am. I want money. I want plenty. I want to swim in it. I want to shower in it. I want to use it. And I want to make love to it. I want to do everything. I love money. Ringgits, dollars, rupiah, no thanks. Yen, two. It's like, and then no Italian ones. You know, like, it's 100,000 lira. I'm like, wow, how much is that? Like $10. I'm like, oh. Can you imagine running around lira, going shopping in Malaysia? You know, I'm going to have to carry, you know, a lorry around. How much is a tea? 1 million lira. I'm like, what, 1 million? No, just kidding. But why? There's great joy in bringing relief to others. There's great joy in giving gifts to others. It's great joy in giving others what they need. You open their heart to something higher. When you give gifts to others, you open their heart to something higher. And you set an example in a positive way to lead them to something higher. Giving gifts is one of the most renowned forms of opening people's hearts and minds, Dharma motivated or not. I treasure that kind of action is giving. I love it. It's my favorite. Out of the six paramis, I love giving. I hate patience. I love giving. Giving is fabulous. So what happens is, I'm just kidding, I like patience. Actually, my name is patience. My name given by His Holiness is Denzin Soba, holding Dharma with great patience. In fact, when they put the names down, there was three of us, because three of us at a time take ordination. When we sat down, you know, they had the name cards ready, and we were blessed by His Holiness and everything. You know, we were there in the same room with them for 3 hours taking our vows. Fantastic. In any case, I'll talk about that in my book. It was for me, it was a big fiasco, because, never mind, I'll talk about it another time. And His Holiness actually was laughing and laughing and laughing at me. I was so embarrassed. I was pleased I made him laugh, but not that way, but never mind. So what happens is when the names were coming down on tray, when they were just about to meet that name, His Holiness, from the throne far away, I don't know how you even see. No. That one not for him. That one for him. This one for him. I was like, oh, he's going to give me a better name. I said, I'm so excited. And then when I got my name, Denzin Soba, because the traditions, the Lama gives you his name half and adds another. So His Holiness's name is Denzin Gyatso. Jesun Nangwan Losan Denzin Gyatso. Denzin Gyatso. Ocean of wisdom, ocean of holding the Dharma. So my name is Denzin from His Holiness, and my second name is Soba from His Holiness, Denzin Soba. Soba is one of the six paramitas. So when he gave me the name Denzin Soba, I think, oh, what is that? Because my Tibetan is not too good that time. It's not too good now either. And it's holding Dharma with patience. I said, patience? Because the guy next to me, you know, the other monk, he got a more cool name, something like, you know, holding the Dharma with great dragon-like power. I can't remember what it was. I was like, that's me. So I think, oh no, patient. And there I am, you know, getting the right name for me. I'm not patient. And then I really believed in the naming ceremony after that. I witnessed it, that His Holiness gave me exactly what I needed to practice the most to make the Dharma grow. And consistently from my Dharma protectors and from my lamas, they've told me you have to practice patience over the years. And I realized, oh my God, it all matches. Patience is enthusiasm and effort. It isn't just not getting angry when someone makes you angry. It's not just simple as that. It's never giving up. It's practicing that. Incredible. When His Holiness gave me that. Anyways, when you understand this and I give you the Dharma talk becomes easier and simpler and goes in faster. You have a foundation. You have a foundation. And the foundation is incredible. And look how much information you get. We don't need a translator. You haven't been to talks and Dharma teachings with translators. Bless them. Bless the lamas, and bless me. Because, you know, our Dharma talks go to 10 hours, 11 hours of Sangramichi because of the translator. And then when he gets it wrong, you know, you sit there, look at them, and you write all this down there, blah, 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 and Sangramichi says, oh, no, that's not what I said. You're like, oh, no. And you scratch that and write something else. It's incredible. And sometimes the dialects are different because Tibetan have many dialects, just like Chinese, so they can't understand the dialects, give you wrong information. But they're very compassionate because it's not an easy job. It's a great job. So we can get it free, home Scott, directly. We waltz in, We waltz in, get Dharma teachings, walk out, practice, waltz in, waltz out, waltz in, waltz out. After a couple of waltzes, we become the band leader. That's right, become a Buddha. Isn't that fabulous? And for those of us who think that Dharma teachings are nothing, is just like that, like that, like that. Well, what else would you be doing, actually? Sometimes I think, ugh, I have to give another Dharma talk. Got to look at all these people and tell them how great compassion is, and they're probably thinking, oh, die. And then some of them are looking at the clocks, you know. And you're like, oh. And it drives you nuts. And some of them are sitting there in the audience, they're great, they're meditating, they're like. And you're like, oh, what am I here for? And some of them actually sit there and pick their nose, admire their nails. You know, they look at their skin. And you just look at them and go, I wish you weren't gone then, you'd get it. They have the disciplinarian monk has big sticks. I never got it, thank goodness, but big. And that's it. You think monks don't get it? They get it. They get it from senior monks. It's a blessing, but they get it. I never got it. They used to walk by the stick near me. I was like, I'd be like. And the minute he's gone, I'd take my food and throw some monks that got on my nerves. Yeah, there's some monks that really got on my nerves. And they're not doing anything. They're sitting there sleeping. Some, not all. They're like. And like, oh God, it's so unfair. Because they're facing this way, and we're facing the altar, and we're up in the front. So everything we do is magnified. Nobody sees them sitting in the corner having a nice nap. So what I do is we get bread in pujas, and I take that, and I wet it with a tea. And of course, I'm like, and I'm quick. I look around. Nobody's looking. And the guy's like, chew. And he's like, oh, wait, what, who, what? Some of them actually snort. They go, oh, and I go, ooh. And then the disciplinarian walks by with a stick, and I just go, you know, I'm the good teacher's pet. And then, you know, I sit there and meditate innocently. Oh, I love it. But after a while, I stop throwing bread at them. You know, I was thinking, it's a little undignified, you know. Can you imagine yourself on a throne? No, I stopped it because they might think I'm not a Rinpoche. You're thinking, what makes you think they are? They already think that. Oh, I know, I know. Fantasies and delusions of grandeur of a Tibetan Lama. You're not the only one that has fantasies and delusions, you know. You're not the only one. Example, you know, Mr. Ngao has delusions, he has hair. Very big delusions, and he has hair. Smoochie has delusions and grandeur that, you know, how much she eats, it doesn't add on to her pounds. Great guy. She looks in the mirror, she's like, you know, I'm Karen Carpenter here. I don't think so. All of us have illusions of grandeur, all of us. And you know, Paris, she actually thinks her hair looks nice. My. She's a bodhisattva, brave warrior. She goes in public and thinks her hair is nice. I mean, usually it's not, but this cut, sorry. She's starting to look Sao Chen-ish.